Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Tonight, we have a plethora of fabulous guests. We welcome the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute's Professor Cheryl McCollum and Defense Attorney Mickey Sherman, and, of course, Michael in Minnesota doing all the hard work and me taking all the credit. Our topic tonight, how to grow large tomatoes in a yogurt cup. Oh, come on. We're talking about George Zimmerman. Please. It was a crazy day. It was so wild. George is not going to testify. The judge is so grumpy, she acts like she has a mongoose stuck in her large intestine. And closing arguments are going to start tomorrow, we hope. George Zimmerman is not going to testify. Now, I'm guessing here that in self-defense cases, the defendant usually does testify because they have to get up there and tell what happened. But with Zimmerman getting up there, that would be a huge risk because, as you heard George talk today, he is not an incredibly eloquent person, and I'm not trying to be rude. It's just I think he would not come across well. And plus, I don't think he needs to. His story has been told through his interviews. The fact that this, in my opinion, that this was brought to trial is an absolute travesty. In this trial, we saw Trayvon Martin's mother testifying. She is very stoic and believable, in my opinion. And when it's all said and done, like my friend Cheryl says, a 17-year-old boy is dead, a man's life is ruined, and there are no winners. Now, here's an interesting little tidbit. Defense lawyers chose not to tell the jury about the toxicology report showing a small amount of marijuana found in Trayvon Martin's body. Zimmerman's attorney said that they tried to balance defending Mr. Zimmerman without needlessly tarnishing Mr. Martin's memory. Do you believe that? Maybe they were. Maybe they were taking the high road. That very well could be. Or maybe they just thought the amount found in the 17-year-old was not enough to bother with. Or maybe they thought they didn't need anything else. Their case is so strong. First off, I would like to welcome defense attorney and friend of the show, Mickey Sherman. Mickey, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, Trish.
Mickey, let's just get the general viewpoint here. What do you think about this case? What do you think? I'm not sure if you had a chance to find out what happened today, but from a defense attorney who I'm sure you're sitting back and just taking all of this in, what do you think of the George Zimmerman case?
Well, first of all, it's a great case. It doesn't involve silly issues. This is a case that was going to have to be tried the moment it happened. I don't think it's as racial a case as people thought it was going to be. It's got great pathos. It's great drama. It's an interesting case. There's interesting issues, the whole stand your ground thing, self-defense, gun carrying, that kind of thing. It's just a pleasant change from the missing white girl or baby who's been murdered case that we just get 52 weeks a year.
Well, that's absolutely true. And do you think that the state of Florida absolutely had to try George Zimmerman? I mean, don't you think, as a defense attorney, don't you think their case is beyond weak, that it's pathetic? Or am I putting words in your mouth?
It's weak, but it's a case that probably had to be tried because otherwise it would look like they tanked it for the white or Hispanic guy. A dead kid, young age, it's going to go to trial. I mean, I think the district attorney or the chief of police got screwed here. I think they did throw him under the buses and said today. But by the same token, I think this case is destined to go to trial. But they didn't have to try it on a murder. They could have tried it on something less.
Like what?
Like a reckless endangerment, like a risk of injury, like the lowest form of manslaughter they have there. They didn't have to put murder in there.
And so do you think that, here's a technical question. Tomorrow, when the judge continues with the jury instructions, can they go even a lower charge? Can they go reckless endangerment all the way down to something minuscule, or does it have to be within the brackets of what she tells the jury?
It's got to be within the brackets of what she tells the jury, and she can only tell the jury what she believes are lesser included offenses, if there are any. If there are any lesser included offenses, and that's totally up to the judge to put in.
And Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, do you know what those lesser charges will be? I'm kind of confused. I'm trying to figure all this out, and I just feel like it's information overload here.
Well, again, that's one thing they're going to hammer out and get together and try to decide. But again, she cannot give them a lesser included that has not been met. So it's not like they can continue what some people have classified as this witch hunt. They have to be able to show that something was presented and something is on the table that the jury can argue about in that room that was put before them. So if they don't have reckless endangerment or they don't have negligence, she's not going to include it. I don't really think that's going to be an issue. I think they'll be able to at least include manslaughter, you know.
I heard the judge talk about today was manslaughter and then aggravated assault. And the aggravated assault has something to do with the fact that there was a firearm discharged.
And this is Michael in Minnesota. Michael in Minnesota is the guy that I depend on to find out the facts. And then he tells the facts, and I say, see how smart I am? So anyway, Michael, where did it end up today? What was the final moment in court? What were they doing?
The final moments in court, they dealt with the Donnelly issue. Remember, Donnelly was the witness who had been seen in court, and the prosecution wanted his testimony stricken. But they were able to prove that he was a witness who was asked to attend. First of all, they had no intention of calling him. He appeared in court last Tuesday and then went Tuesday, I believe. And O'Mara had never even met him, so he wouldn't have recognized him one way or the other. But as West was leaving on the morning break, he saw Donnelly, and Donnelly extended his hand, and they greeted one another. And it was then that West explained that you're on a witness list and you're not allowed to be here. I'm sorry. And Donnelly was very apologetic, said he had no idea. The family of George had asked him to go and show support since they've all been banned, which is another point of contention for me.
That really sucks. If I can interrupt you, Michael. And what the prosecution did is listed Zimmerman's family as witnesses so that they couldn't be inside the courtroom. And they had no intention of calling him. They didn't call him, but they couldn't violate the sequestration rule. And that really sucks. That's a low blow.
I thought so, too. So
Michael,
the judge ruled on that when West was testifying, or O'Mara was doing the arguing, but he said, I think West has more information. And so I just essentially regurgitated what West was saying to the judge. And then she decided, you know, the prosecution got back up and tried to make a big deal out of it. And she said, I just, you know, we've gone over the evidence he heard the day he was in court. It had nothing to do with what he testified to. His testimony was not tainted. I don't believe he acted maliciously. In a case where there's been over 200 witnesses and just a fraction called, I can see how someone would not get the message. I don't believe this rises to the level. And so she allowed his testimony to stand. And then from that point, they went into going over the juror instructions. And there were the subjective items that they're going to, first of all, the state and the defense is supposed to email the court and each other what they want as far as the subjectives, and that is the lower lesser included of manslaughter and aggravated assault. And then they're taking that up tomorrow at 9. The jury will not return until 1, and that is when they will hear prosecution closing statements, and they will return Friday for the defense's closing statements.
And so
they're meeting at 9 to go over the final jury instructions.
Okay,
and I believe the prosecution still has an option if they can locate their witness to possibly put on one rebuttal witness. But O'Mara started to say something to the effect of, well, if they open that door, then we're going to have, you know, plenty of sir rebuttal. They want to bring in the arresting officer of that assault charge on George, the undercover cop that arrested him in 2005.
From 8 years earlier.
Years earlier. And I don't believe she'll probably allow it. Well, I shouldn't say that. That's giving her more credit than I have.
I don't think she'll allow it.
I hope not. But anyway, I think that option is still open. And she really admonished the defense once again court saying, don't come into my court and say, if you do this, I'll do that. That is not going to fly here.
That was great. That was really good. I love seeing that.
Mickey, even though the defense
attorney is getting beat up, I love the way the judge did that.
Well, I'm going to ask you
about
that, Mickey.
I was going to ask you to speak about a couple things, Mickey.
Okay.
First of all, isn't it your client's right to not be asked if they're going to testify until their team has stopped or has finished their case in chief?
Yes.
So why
she was
she
100%
bad
right about everything except the timing? I don't know why she did that, because everything else legally she's been right on. And I wouldn't last 10 minutes in front of this judge, because I make jokes. I don't make knock-knock jokes by any means, but I don't ask to approach witnesses and things like that. She would kill me. But I have such respect for her. I think by and by her rulings have been great. I mean, the letting the THC come in, even though they're not going to put it in, that was a bit of a bold move on her part, showing that she's not just prosecution-oriented. She doesn't
mm-hmm.
take any crap from anybody. And she owns a tough courtroom. I think the jury probably loves her.
Michael, hold on one second. I want to ask Mickey one question here, and I know I'm going to get both of you mixed up tonight, so I apologize. Mickey Sherman, everybody knows and loves you. Thank you again for joining us tonight. We'll be going to Cheryl McCollum in just a little bit. Michael in Minnesota has all the details that we need about this case. But, Mickey Sherman, let's talk a little bit about the judge. I find her, as a layperson, a bit offensive. I think she's rude. I think she's showing favoritism. It just seems like she's bent over the backwards for the prosecution. And you don't seem to think
but that's the way it usually is. You know, the standard joke that he said to the client, you know why the judge is sitting up there? Because there's not enough chairs at the prosecution's table.
Oh, man. Okay. So that's not unusual.
But I don't see – I'm used to a judge, like, when I ask a question, the judge will go sustain. In other words, excuse me, Your Honor, there was no objection. And the judge will say, well, there should have been. I've had that happen a dozen times over the years.
Oh, my God.
And she's letting the lawyers try their case. She's just not taking any crap from anybody. I kind of like her. I think she's a good representative of the judiciary.
Well, I like her, too, but I do find her, like I said, just a little bit offensive and one-sided. But apparently that's not unusual in the criminal justice system whatsoever.
No, it's supposed to be like that.
Mickey Sherman, I want to make sure that we have this correct. Michael was saying that the lesser and included charges are going to be brought up tomorrow, and then it's up to the judge to decide if it's going to be manslaughter.
100%.
Okay, so she can decide. Now, it'll be interesting to see what she includes, because I think that will really point to if she's trying to help the prosecution, because if she includes several really smaller charges, then he'll be convicted of something. But if she just keeps him on the high end, he might be acquitted. I don't know. Mickey, what do you think? I know you hate answering this question about what a jury might do, but let's just hear your thoughts. What do you think they might do?
Right now, I think the jury, I would say the jury's going to find this guy not guilty of absolutely everything. But, there's cases where I've had a case where you win every single battle, you win every single skirmish, everything goes your way, the motions to this, the motions to that, and then they come in guilty. So you really can never tell. It's worse than reading tea leaves. It's the most frustrating thing in the world. And I can't even watch it on TV. When the jury starts to go out, I turn it off. I can't watch it. I get too nauseous. I can't even watch a movie or a TV series.
What's the worst case that you've had that where you were waiting for the jury? Was it the Michael? Oh my gosh, I apologize.
Yes.
I forgot his last. Was it that? Please
That's
say
okay.
his last name.
You can forget the last name.
Okay, won't forget. Okay, we'll say it. But yes, Skankle. That was probably your worst one, waiting to see what happened. I can see that. That would
no,
be
the worst
incredibly.
Thing of finding out that he's been found guilty.
That's a whole other show that maybe someday we'll be able to do. I hope.
Not with Mickey.
Oh, come on. Someday with you. Maybe 20 years from now.
Maybe.
You and Michael. Okay. Okay, Cheryl. Cheryl McCollum, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. You've been on HLN and all of the big shows. You're smart. You've seen pretty much everything when it comes to the courtroom and crime. You're involved. Your real-life job is involving crime and criminals. What did you think of the judge today? Were you as annoyed as I was at her behavior, or were you like Mickey and kind of like, yeah, good for her?
I'm kind of like Mickey. I mean, that's just what you almost expect from a judge. But I will tell you the part that just knocked me backwards, that I did not think that the defense jumped on like they should. And that was, you had a female young mother, a home invasion victim, that said 911 told her to get the weapon and protect herself, which not only does it go to what George said about the break-ins in the neighborhood and the crime, it also goes to what I said on your show months ago. 911 told George not to follow him for George's protection, not Trayvon's.
Right.
And I just thought if they had explored that a little more and said, wait, 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 911 told you to get a weapon, whatever you had? That, think about that. What might they have said to George if he said, hey, I think this guy's doubling back? If George had been on the phone still, if he hadn't hung up. And, and that's why I'm saying, when the 911 operator was there, according to your SOP, according to what you tell people all the time, I guarantee you that's what he would have said.
And, Michael, in Minnesota, I know that you have a lot of great questions. We were talking about them earlier. I'm going to give you the floor because you are going to ask, I think, what a lot of people are thinking. So talk to Cheryl and talk to Mickey Sherman, Michael.
Well, I wanted to talk to Mickey Sherman. Isn't a self-defense case, this is not about stand your ground from what I understand, because they would have had to declare it. So it is self-defense.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the behavior of Trayvon Martin, the assailer, or the person who is the attacker, antagonist in this scenario, why is his past fighting not relevant?
It should be. The dangerous nature or the perceived dangerous nature of the victim is absolutely positively loud when you depend on self-defense. I once had a guy who killed somebody, and the guy that he killed, I wanted to prove that he may have had a gun. And the way I proved it is I put a police officer on the stand who testified that he arrested the guy for breaking into a gun store and stealing 47 guns. I mean, that's the extreme. But you can absolutely get that in evidence. Yet I think that they're worried about maybe too much victim bashing here.
Well,
that's why they didn't put the PH in the city.
I understand that, but at the same time, having gone through the Arias case where Travis Alexander was bashed to beyond hell and back by a known liar without any kind of substantive truth, proof behind any of the allegations, how can we be in the same country and have two trials run so completely amok? I just can't understand it.
Boy, I bet Mickey can talk a lot to that.
Every judge is different. Every judge is different. You got to go by what you want, the hand you're dealt. And there's really no comparison between these two cases. I mean, her self-defense thing is just outright silly. Mm-hmm. And this one is marginally positive.
Now, I know you've been on the HLN talk shows, Mickey, quite a bit. And I'm still appalled. I happened to catch part of Nancy Grace's show tonight. And she has got George Zimmerman completely guilty of second-degree murder. And, and I don't understand what has happened to reporting where pundits, I brought up the Walter Cronkite days when reporters just spoke facts without any inflection, and we've become such a sensationalist media. We have people stirring a pot that is so dangerous to stir. Isn't there some culpability or responsibility on the parts of these HLN hosts to be a little more careful?
Amen. Amen. Mickey Sherman.
We get the TV coverage that we deserve. If people didn't want to see what she's saying, they would be tuning in. She wouldn't get the ratings, and she wouldn't be as popular and successful as she is. I did the pilot for Court TV back in 1989. And then when Court TV went on the air, I was there as a commentator the first day of 1991, July 1st. And then they did that murder case of mine with a guy that had post-traumatic stress. So I've seen the development of these shows over the last 20 years. I've been on every one, a lot with Cheryl, by the way, Cheryl. It's good to talk to you.
You too, dear.
Yeah, really. We've done shows together, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's funny. When you're in this world, Tricia, you forget who you know and who you don't know in reality.
That's right.
I mean, I feel like I know Cheryl, but I don't know that I ever met her. Do we ever meet where we were?
I don't
probably
think we were ever
her
in the same
street.
Studio.
Right.
I think we were just on the same show, so different cities.
So
I
was on
help.
The same show with a woman for 2 years, and then I finally married her, and that's when I got to know her.
Well, Mickey, let's talk.
Sure, we're divorced now, but that's how we met on the shows.
Well, that in itself is a reality show right there. Mickey Sherman, let's just talk about the good old days for a moment of Court TV. I remember Court TV when they actually reported on trials and they gave you the facts, and they did offer some commentary, but it was not hysterical. It wasn't over-the-top dramatic.
Well, That's because it was invented, created, and produced by Steve Brill, who was kind of tried to make it like almost like a documentary. There was no funniness, there was no silliness, there was no enraging. The original anchors were Jack Ford, who was great. Nancy was not an original comment. I was commenting on Nancy's case in Florida before she ever got to Court TV. They brought her up to team up with Johnny Cochran, who had his own show, Cochran and Grace.
I remember that, right.
But we would work in four-hour shifts. If you worked at the Court TV show, there would be 4 hours, 9 to 1, 1 to 5, and 5 to 9.
And all talking about court cases and true crime. That's wild.
But they would only allow generally one camera in the court. The production value was really crappy. But it was really good. Then years later, when Henry Schleif, who now has the Discovery Channel, when he took it over, he made it more entertainment-oriented. And then when the other HLN came into that, they made it totally entertainment motivated.
And that's what it is today.
A lot of people wonder why jerks like me go on these shows when we know we're just going to get hollered at by Nancy or Mike Scudero. At least she allows some defense to come on. And I got to tell you, you may or you may not know, in the real world, she's a great person.
I've heard
She's not the ogre that people think she is. She's a very sweet woman. She's a good friend. She's been a great and amazingly loyal friend to me over these many years. So I cannot say anything bad about her. And the key is, when you do these shows, and Cheryl will tell you, you just can't take it too seriously. We're on television. We're not curing cancer. We're not doing bypasses. We're just talking about what other people are doing. And it's so easy to sit back in our armchair and criticize other lawyers.
Now,
yeah,
Mickey,
well,
you wrote the book, How Do You Defend These People, didn't you? Isn't that you?
Yes, I wrote a book called How Can You Defend Those People. It's been optioned for a TV series for the last 3 years, and maybe they'll still get off the ground. But you may want to get it. I have a chapter on TV lawyering, and just telling you all about the backstage. It's a backstage pass to all these court shows.
Okay,
have you read that,
Michael? I want to read it. No, I haven't read it yet, but I want to. But anyway, I'm going to pose it to you. Have you ever had a client you knew was guilty, say a Jody Arias? Are there people that you absolutely would not defend, or do you believe everybody, regardless of their guilt, is entitled to fair representation?
That's two chapters in my book. One is a chapter called People I Will Not Represent. And everyone has their own line in the sand. And what I did is I interviewed a bunch of lawyer friends of mine, people like you know, people like Mark Garagos, all the famous pundits in the news. And everyone has their own line. For example, with Geralyn Merritt, a great lawyer out of Denver, she was second chair in the Timothy McVeigh case. She did everything she could to keep Timothy McVeigh alive. She'll represent Timothy McVeigh, who killed 28 little babies, but she won't represent people who are accused of assaulting the elderly.
Interesting.
Who's the great lawyer from Texas? Dick DeGaren.
Yeah.
Dick DeGaren represents murderers. He represented the guy, Bobby Durst, who chopped up his neighbor and bunch of little pieces and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't represent bad check writers.
What?
Go figure. I swear to God. It's in my book. Everyone has their own stick. With me, it's child molesters. I just have a problem with that. I just can't do it. And strange rapes. But the other question is, have I ever represented anybody who's guilty, who I know is guilty? Absolutely. And I put it in my book as well, for murder.
And you don't have, and we've talked about this, but I want to bring it up again. You don't have a problem with that, do you?
No.
Not at all.
People like me are missing a certain enzyme that other people
well,
have.
You have to be. How could you have looked at like the grieving family in the Arias case and defended Jody Arias? I just want to know how that works.
I'll tell you what I do. I'm very consistent in what I do. When I have a murder case or a horrible case, the first day of the trial or the first day of the arraignment, the first day that the victim's family is in court, I walk over to them, I extend my hand, and I say, I'm sorry, I'm Mickey Sherman. I'm going to be representing Joe Blow. And I just want to tell you I'm very, very sorry for your loss. And I really, really hope that you don't take anything I say personally. And I will do my damnedest not to disrespect your family member.
And so you would not have allowed the defense to go down the roads they did if you had represented Arias?
I represented Arias.
Jody Arias. I don't know if Mickey is familiar with all that happened
in
Jody
Arias.
I definitely am.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Would you have allowed all the pedophilia and things that could not be substantiated in?
No.
Thank you.
No, but you know, but I got to tell you, it's easy for me to say, and what you're saying is you're not going to believe your client. But when you're sitting at counsel table and the client says blah 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 blah, you have to listen to them, and you're going to wind up getting what they call habeas if you don't. When you lose and they go to jail for 150 years, they come back at you on an appeal basis by saying he didn't listen to me when I said that ABC. So you got to be a little bit too. It's unfortunate, Michael, but you have to be very defensive when you practice criminal law.
And Mickey, where can we get your book? I want to make sure we get that in there, and I want to talk about it at the end of the show too. How do we order your book? How can you
Amazon.
Those people? Is it
Amazon?
Amazon.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, now back to the case, ladies and gentlemen. Cheryl McCollum, as you sit and breathe there today, tomorrow we're going to start with closing arguments, and I know you hate these kind of questions, but oh well. Do you think there is a chance that if they wrap up closing arguments, let's say Friday, 2 o'clock Eastern, do you think there is absolutely maybe a slight chance we might have a verdict by Friday night, early Friday night?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
How come?
Because I think if they wrap up Friday, it won't be, they're going to need at least 3 hours, they said. Then they'll have something to eat. By the time they pick a foreman and really do the first type of real talking, you're looking at Saturday anyway. So I think if they do their job and go through every single thing, even if it's kind of a slam dunk and everybody already agrees by some miracle, which, again, I think with six women is going to be a little tough, depending on the number of lesser included now. If there's only two, it's going to be much faster. Because I can already tell you, they didn't meet legally aggravated assault. They didn't meet it. So
yeah, the defense is going to argue against those two lesser included. I know that.
Oh, of course. But I mean, if you let in aggravated assault, they didn't legally meet it. So, again, it's going to come down to what this jury decides to do, which, you know, I've said over and over, you can't ever predict what they're going to do. I can honestly tell you there's no way they're going to come back on murder two. There's no way.
Okay, what do you mean, Cheryl? What is the criteria for aggravated assault that has not been met, if you could explain that to the listener?
Well, aggravated assault basically is you pull a weapon on somebody for no reason. Like you pull a weapon, you're going to threaten them or you're going to rob them or you're going to harm them. That's not what happened here. Jordan did not engage the weapon until he himself was being harmed. So it's not like he pulled a weapon and said, hey, what are you doing out here? That might be aggravated assault. You know, but in this case, again, the prosecution has put up nothing except a verbal theory that George engaged the weapon and Trayvon was trying to back off, which, again, their theory is so asinine because they want you to believe that Trayvon got the better of George and was busting him up pretty good, but George was somehow able to, with one hand, keep Trayvon on top of him, with the other hand, get the weapon and shoot him. Nobody's going to believe that. If you were that capable, you wouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And two, if Trayvon is the one that needed help, when Mr. Good came out the side door and was saying, hey, y'all, stop it, stop it, I'm going to call the police, Trayvon never once looked at him. He never once got up. He never once said, I need help. He never once ran off. The only person that has asked for help, the only person that called 911 was George Zimmerman. The only person that is injured, George Zimmerman. So not only do we have some reasonable doubt, there's reasonable doubt everywhere. And here's the other thing, and I would love to hear Mickey's take on this. You have no rebuttal. You're not ready for a rebuttal today. You knew they were finished. I knew they were finished. Tricia, you talked 3 days ago about let's line these people up. But again,
right.
They're not ready. And they said, well, yeah, there's one more guy, and I hadn't had a chance to talk to him. I don't know if he's available or not. What, another Skype? Another? What are you talking about? How can your people not be sitting on go?
And Mickey,
and
what do you say about? Go ahead. Oh, go ahead,
Charles. One thing, let him have it. No rebuttal equals no case.
They were
Mickey?
Too busy not preparing their other witness, the medical examiner.
He was not
just the worst medical examiner witness. He's the worst witness I've ever seen in my life.
No. Dee Dee Gentile was the worst I've ever seen in my life.
Dee Dee was a legal scholar.
No, you can forgive her. She's limited. She's 19 years old and she's a limited kid. Okay, so she gets a discount. She gets a free pass. But this guy is like some kind of a professional.
Let's say, guys, I want to bring everybody up to speed here so everybody knows what we're talking about. We have Cheryl McCollum with us. We also have Mickey Sherman and Michael in Minnesota. We're talking about the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case. It looks like it's going to be going to the jury, and the jury will start deliberating hopefully on Friday. And we're talking about the medical examiner who was on the stand a few days ago, who did something that now I have learned this, and I will be watching this forever. He brought his own notes to talk about the case. He was the medical examiner for the prosecution. And the defense says, excuse me, what are those notes? And he said, they're my notes. Well, I guess it's law 101 when you're a witness for the prosecution and you're a part of basically the team, the medical examiner. If you bring your own personal notes, they automatically become evidence because it is required that the defense speak. No? What? No?
They don't
what?
Become evidence. Generally, no. But they're allowed to be looked at by the other side.
Okay.
If you use
allowed
anything
to
refresh your memory while you're on the witness stand, the other side can see, well, can I see what you're looking at?
And he refused, right, at first. He said, no, these are just my notes.
Yeah, at first, which is insane. I was once being deposed in a case, and I was really pissed off that I had to do this. And I hated the lawyer who was doing it to me, deposing me. Let's say his name was John Smith. And every time they asked me a question, I'd take out a 3x5 card out of my jacket, look at it, and then look at it again, and then say, and then give the answer. And I did this for like 8 times. And finally, the lawyer says, "What are you looking at?" I go, "Just a note of mine." And I did the same thing that witness did the other day. I refused to let him see it, and so he makes this big legal argument. And my lawyer, meanwhile, because I was like the defendant in the case, not a criminal case, says, Mickey, you got to show him the notice. Are you sure? Are you sure? Of course I know you can show him. So he puts it on the table. He says, try not to call John Smith an asshole too much. And there's a few more words, and the guy's name wasn't John Smith.
I want to know. Oh, I love it. You opened it up, and he stepped in and fell into it.
Oh, totally. And I didn't tell him. The guy was representing me because I represented a sex offender, got him a suspended sentence on misdemeanors with no sexual registration. And then the guy violated his probation and wound up going to jail, and he decided to sue me for malpractice because I had a plea guilty to 2 misdemeanors. The guy wound up assaulting the lawyer who I was making fun of. I wound up doing about 18 years, but that was the lawsuit against me. It was great. The best part is when I hear that story from other people who I don't even know.
Oh, I love it. So it's made the rounds. It's now legendary. I love that.
Yeah, it's great. Great.
So anyway, so we have this medical examiner up there, and he has these notes, and he refuses at first. And explain to me, Cheryl McCollum, and to our audience, because we need to get caught up on this. why was that so horrible? Why do people like Mickey Sherman say he is absolutely the worst witness ever?
Well, there's so many reasons. But the deal with the note is you can use your file that you originally did to jar your memory, to go, oh, yeah, I remember that, the date, the time, the address, and all that. If you make handwritten notes in anticipation of what question you're going to be asked, and mm-hmm. you subsequently write those answers down, when you take it to the witness stand, it becomes evidence. So when he wrote in the margin some hand notes about the level of THC in Trayvon Martin could affect his behavior, that's evidence now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of the most – that's not even a rookie mistake. I don't know anybody that would have done that, especially not a medical examiner.
I've never heard
especially
of it.
Never. You're basically making a cheat sheet. And that's why Wes was like, are you reading something? And
he couldn't
was like,
believe
yeah.
it.
Like, I mean, have you ever watched TV? I mean, they don't even do it on the worst crime shows I've ever seen. When they get everything else wrong, they don't do that. So it's just, it's remarkable. But I'm going to tell you, if you had asked me a month ago, 2 months ago, hey, McCollum, do you think we'll see a medical examiner using notes and a star witness using racial slurs and have a couple of AKAs and, you know, the use of avatars and FaceTiming with a witness in her bed, a city manager circumventing the police, witnesses sitting in the gallery, police officers testifying for the defendant, no redirect. I'd have been like, Trisha, don't even call me. I am not going to be on your show. Don't even ask me that. That's ridiculous. I would have hung up.
You would have been offended.
And don't forget, the medical examiner's testimony was that I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
And I keep changing my opinion every 5 minutes.
Oh, no. He said, I remember nothing. Zero.
I remember nothing.
So, like, I have a 10-year-old daughter.
The medical examiner.
Okay, medical examiner. That's what I thought.
Medical
examiner.
But, I mean, I have a 10-year-old daughter that looked at me, and she was like, Mama, are they using an avatar? Well, what can I tell her? I mean, honey, you just summed up this whole case.
10-year-old can sum it up right there. Well, let me ask you, and Mickey, maybe you can tell me, and maybe we'll go to Cheryl and Michael after this to get their opinions. But Mickey Sherman, what in the world would the prosecution be thinking? Why did they is it so obvious that they didn't sit down with this guy, or could they have sat down with him and it went over his head? What do you think? What happened?
Nobody can be that stupid. Nobody can be that. I mean, it doesn't take that much to prepare the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and I can't imagine that anybody would ever be that stupid to be an expert witness and to say things like, I keep changing my opinion every 5 minutes. He actually said that and to say it boldly with a nasty attitude. That was the other thing. He had this offensive attitude as though everyone was being mean to him.
Mm-hmm.
They were just restrained, I think. And when he said that, I don't remember anything from the autopsy or whatever. Yet, I mean, how many enormous cases go on in Sanford, Florida, that they know is going to wind up on the big screen?
Well, yeah, none.
That he
I
might
mean,
have been prepared for that.
Yeah, you would think he would be prepared for the biggest case in the nation at the time.
Yeah.
Any guesses on the repercussions that will face this medical examiner, Mickey?
Yeah, I think he's going to be doing saliva tests at local high schools or something. I can't imagine. I don't imagine he's ever going to be right back in a courtroom again unless he's there as a defendant.
Michael in Minnesota, I'm wondering if you're bursting with questions. I want to go to you, my dear.
Well, first of all, I did hear a talking head medical examiner on Dr. Drew, and
mm-hmm.
he said in his defense, he didn't know Trayvon Martin when he did the autopsy. We're talking about a community that's rife with young black men dying of gunshot wounds, and he didn't realize at the time. You got to remember, this man wasn't even charged. So at the time he did perform the autopsy, it was a simple one single gunshot wound in and out. It wasn't, you know, he didn't realize that the case was going to become the case as a nation. Was the
mm-hmm.
defense I heard, and I'm only repeating what I heard said.
And I also
want Mickey to know I've ordered his book. I don't know if he gets a tweet since we've talked,
I
ordered
your
Kindle version.
Now I can go out this weekend. Thank you. Thanks so much. I can go out this weekend.
Yeah.
Cheryl wants to jump in really quick. Cheryl, go for it. What
please.
Did you want to say? Yes,
there
jump,
is
jump.
No defense for this guy. Number one, we talked about on this show, that's part of the problem, that this jury's going to hear him say that, where they've tried to paint this picture of, oh, it's all white, everybody's privileged, and this is the only black child that's ever been murdered by a white guy. Okay, he just dispelled that for them beautifully. The second problem is the toxicology and other things, they all come back at different times. So it's not like he did the autopsy one day and was done. This was ongoing. So, again, the detective would have followed up with him. The lead investigator would have had a conference with him. While all the news media and everything, erupting, somebody would have said to him, hey, dude, you know this is getting real serious.
Right.
You better check this out. The prosecution, right, this was not something, if you're even riding in your car or you're at home watching the news, something's going to go, wait a minute, I've got Sereno's case. I just talked with him. He would know this. Mm-hmm. And the reason you know it is he made a cheat sheet. So he had time to re-examine his notes and what he did to recall, look, there was no other injury. This was a single gunshot wound at 90-degree angle. He could have been an awesome witness for what he was supposed to be saying. Not,
right.
I don't remember anything about this case. Nothing. Zero. Who the hell said that? When he's your medical guy. And the one you paid ended up looking even more ridiculous.
Well, so what
okay,
did
I
want
to emphasize again, that was not me saying it. I'm only repeating what I
heard. No, and I understand, but I think everybody needs to understand how this works. It didn't like you get an autopsy report in the mail and that's it. You go down and you talk to him. You go back and say, hey, I got, your tox results. Tell me what you think that means. Tell me what 1.3 means or 0.7. What does it mean to you? Because you're trying to put together the story here. So you've got a dad saying, hey, he's an innocent child, and now you know, he could have been meeting the weed man. So you realize, okay, where he comes from 7-Eleven, he doesn't use the front gate, he uses the cut-through. Who uses the cut-through that's been there 4 days? Somebody that knows about the cut-through. So he's in the cut, he's got THC, could he have had, met the weed man? He had $40 on him, two $20 bills. Where'd they come from? An allowance? That's what an investigator's going to be doing. That's why they wanted to talk to Dee Dee. Well, you ain't got to talk to her for 5 minutes. You don't have to go on her Facebook page but for 2 seconds to know she's smoking and drinking underage. So if that's his very best friend, guess what? What your grandmama told is true. Birds of a feather. And again, they gave that to the jury on a silver platter.
They did. They really did.
I have another question
for
Mickey.
Yes, sure. Yes, go ahead, Michael, in Minnesota.
Mickey, I was catching up on some of the things I had missed earlier in the trial, and one was a motion by the defense against the prosecution for withholding evidence. Are you familiar with this? This has to do with the items that were on the phone that they didn't turn over, and then the young man in the IT department went to that Wes White, his attorney, and Wes White and this young man, Ruben or Ryben or whatever it was, ended up testifying. He's now on paid leave or on administrative leave from his job because of coming forward in this case. The judge ruled that she wouldn't rule on this until the end of trial. Do you believe that there will be sanctions or anything against the prosecution? How does that usually play out in cases like this?
They usually forgive the prosecution and blame the defense attorneys. We're like the redheaded stepchild, I tell you. The prosecutors often get away with so much like that.
So that's just not that unusual, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Michael.
That's terrible. What is with the justice system? If the jurors are supposed to be the finders of truth, how can they know the truth if all sides aren't playing fairly? I don't understand that.
I've been asked that by themselves.
What?
Michael, we've seen it where juries go home and then their families and friends are like, how could you find that guy not guilty? What about A, B, C, and D? And they say, we didn't know about any of that. Had I known it, so that's not unusual. And it's one of those things, sometimes who are you protecting? Who's the real victim here? because it may very well be George Zimmerman that's the real victim that's been railroaded.
That's mm-hmm. how I feel. And I entered this not knowing to tell Mickey. I entered this trial thinking Zimmerman was a vigilante, not knowing a thing.
I
had followed the media.
I did, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I totally did, too.
Yep. And then having watched the trial, I've been waiting. We all, the first week that we were doing the show, I kept saying, is there going to be something ever? And there never was. We just all mm-hmm. waited and waited. Here we are at the end of trial, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
There's a reason why the chief of police never charged him.
Yeah, hello, exactly. Maybe he knew what the heck was going on here. That's exactly right. We have lots of people in the chat room tonight, and I know we're going to get a lot of people listening to this show a little bit later. So let's go around the table again once more, and I want to talk a little bit more about the facts of the case. Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, can you tell me one thing in the George Zimmerman trial in the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman for killing Trayvon Martin? What is the prosecution's strongest point, or is there a strong point?
The strongest point is he got out of the car.
Okay, he got out of the car. And hence, yep. people can say maybe he started to follow, and he's the
yep.
one that instigated it. Got it. Mickey Sherman,
yep.
same question to you. What do you think is the strongest point that the prosecution has in this case?
A dead young African-American kid.
There you go. Michael in Minnesota, what do you think?
I can't think.
I'm kind of that way, too. I don't know. I really don't know.
I think Mickey's probably the closest. Mm-hmm. And I do. We've talked about it, I believe, and Cheryl even said before his show tonight, if they come back with a conviction, it's something that they had already in their minds before this trial. Because having listened to the evidence exclusively, like I did, there's just no evidence to support anything other than poor George Zimmerman was having the shit kicked out of him, and he defended mm-hmm. himself. And it's a shame, but that's the bottom line of the facts that I've been presented.
Mickey Sherman, if there is any guilty verdict whatsoever, do you feel this would be an excellent case for the appeals court, and will it be overturned, in your opinion?
No. You can never
really?
Count on an appeal. No.
So you don't
what's
really?
Appeal? It's a judge's decision. It's a jury's decision, rather. And the judge has not made any outrageous rulings against the defense.
Mm-hmm.
But not
so
allowing Trayvon's history, isn't that outrageous?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's that big a deal. Unless he pulled guns on people himself.
So let me ask you this. Let's get back to the appeal issue. Let's say they find him guilty of second-degree murder. I don't think anybody thinks that's going to happen. Wouldn't the appeal process involve going over this judge's head to another judge? How does that work?
But to a judge's – Cheryl would probably know better than me. Kind of do appellate work. But a panel of appellate judges would eventually mm-hmm. take a look at it. And then arguably the Supreme Court of Florida.
Is that the case, Cheryl McCollum?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's going to have some appeals, but they're not going to go anywhere, probably.
Yeah.
That's just the real world. So he might say, well, I had ineffective counsel. Well, we all know that ain't true. So that's not going to go anywhere. He's going to say, mm-hmm. well, I didn't understand. Yes, you did. I mean, she's ad nauseum made sure he's understood. So they're not going to go anywhere, but they all appeal, whatever. But my issue is, if he goes, I don't think he's going to live long enough to appeal very often.
That's
if he goes
what I was, my next question of Mickey was going to be, Mickey, is any sentence a death sentence that involves jail time for George Zimmerman?
No, I don't think so.
You don't
really
think he'll be killed
No.
We've had people on here saying that you know, other defense attorneys that have said that they feel like it's a death sentence. You don't think so?
No.
How come?
I think they'll put him in solitary for a while, or not with the regular population. I think they'll be very careful to take it. And don't forget, Bernie Madoff is doing well in jail. This is a guy that a million people want to have murdered. The only people who got murdered in jail are Jeffrey Dahmer, who was murdered by an inmate, and one of the priest cases from Boston. The priest was murdered in jail, and the Leopold and Loeb case in 1933. Loeb was killed in jail. It doesn't happen as often as people think. And you've got some awfully bad people in some of the maximum or even medium security prisons who do just well.
People, we have some calls, and I'm going to take a chance here. Mickey and Cheryl knows this, so does Michael. We do not have a seven-second delay, so sometimes it can get a little dicey. So let's just give it a shot here because we've had some people holding quite a while. This is for area code 478. Area code 478, do you have a question for Cheryl or Mickey on Trisha's True Crime Radio?
Yes, ma'am. I'm
Hi.
Here.
Hi. What's your question, my dear?
First of all, my nick is Sonia610. I'm not going to give you my real name.
Oh, you don't have
Second
to give
of
it.
All, Cheryl, you are awesome. So,
thank you so much.
When the judge started asking Zimmerman if he was going to testify, did anyone notice the reaction of the prosecution?
No.
They were like,
I didn't.
Crushed. One is covering his mouth. The other is like wiping his eye. The third one is starting to stutter. Did they just see their case go to heck in a handbasket? I think they might have. What do you think, Cheryl?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. I tell you what I noticed first is when she asked him the first time, not the second time. He proved again what I had said all along. George Zimmerman is not the brightest bulb. He's just not. And when you watch him, you're like, really? You know, ask for more time if you want to, but how do you not know right now whether or not you're going to get on the stand? Y'all are winnies. You get on that stand, you could blow the whole gig.
Mm-hmm.
So watching him today, almost like he doesn't understand anything she's asking him, only, again, solidifies there is no way this man was getting the shit kicked out of him, and then he comes up with the greatest lie ever that veteran detectives and use of force experts and an air marshal cannot decide he's a liar. So there's no way I think he lied about his story. I thought he was telling the truth from the beginning, and my first reason was because he said he was the one screaming the very first second he got a chance to tell that to somebody. I was calling for help and nobody would help me. He didn't say nobody came. He said nobody would help me.
Mm-hmm,
so to
right.
me, that was very clear. It was him, because I've never in 30-something years had a defendant take on the verbiage that the victim was using at the time of an attack. Never.
And make it their own.
I've never even seen a movie. Never. And, and the two things that back that up, he did not know at that time there was not an eyewitness. And when he was told by the detective, hey, we think the videotape got it, he was relieved.
Mm-hmm.
That's a true person. That's an honest person.
And I agree. That's with that absolutely when that he was told about the videotape. That wasn't true, by the way, but he was relieved.
It's
and that absolutely. Yes, it was attacked. Mickey Sherman, I think you were going to jump in there. Where, did you have something to say, or was I just hoping and praying that you did? Mickey, are you there? Mickey Sherman?
I have something to say.
Oh, yes, please,
go ahead. Is it possible the judge that has been so pro-prosecution and apparently really is always about the victim, is it possible that when the prosecution grimaced and cowered at her words, is it possible she's not all that bad? Sort of like the knock-knock joke, yeah?
What do you think?
Well,
Cheryl?
If Mickey was still here, he would be telling you.
Like, this might be Mickey right here. He may have called back. Hold on one sec. Mickey, is that you?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry, I don't know what happened. We lost you for a minute. But anyway, Mickey, did you hear that question?
I got bored and hung up.
Okay, so...
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Did you hear Sonia's question, or would you like her to repeat it?
As I recall, it was when Zimmerman was asked if he wanted to testify, the prosecutors were like very uneasy in their seats.
That was one of them, yeah. So, what did you think of that?
I just think that's something the judge has to do. And again, this judge is not allowed to last. I'm definitely not going out to drinks with her. But I think, by and large, she's doing a better job than most judges. See, everything is judged these days, not these days, in the last 20 years. Everything is judged by the O.J. case. That's the standard. But sadly, it's the standard for when the criminal justice system went down the toilet. All the defense attorneys after that, we all became weasels and snakes. The prosecutors became incompetent, and the judges became morons. So every judge, and it's the biggest reason why there are not more televised court cases, every judge does not want to, quote-unquote, be another Ito. So they clamp down, and they want to, and they pride themselves in how strict they are, that they were able to keep control of the case as opposed to Judge Ito.
Very interesting. I think it would be great if we could have more cameras in the courtroom, but that's a very good point, Mickey. Sonia, why don't you repeat your question so Mickey can hear it, because I think it's a great one for him. Sonia, are you there? I'm
Sonia
losing
got
everybody.
Sonia got bored, hung up.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Sonia got bored.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm just watching the chat.
Okay. Anyway, Sonia, repeat your last question. Mickey didn't hear it, and I think it's a good one for him.
What was my last question?
Yeah, you said
it?
I have
Tricia.
I can't repeat it because I can't remember it because it was 30 seconds ago, and so it's gone
yes,
for me.
I know.
But I do remember. I do remember.
I do believe I said that when the judge started asking
judge,
Zimmerman
yeah.
in a very pointed way, "Are you going to testify?" The prosecution cowered.
Well, no, it
one
was before that. It was
covered his mouth. Huh?
It was the other one. It was you said.
No,
you
this
think
is the
judge.
One, Trish. Because then she went on to say, "Was the judge? Do you think the judge is better than we thought?" Is how
there we go.
The
oh,
question
yes.
ends.
You're right.
That's what it, yes, the better.
That's
better
what
than
I
we
was
thought.
Saying.
Okay, so say that again. I love my interview skills, huh? Say that again, Sonia, about the.
Okay, so perhaps the judge that seems so evil and pro-prosecution, who actually likes to see criminals get time, mm-hmm. perhaps she is advocating in a way for the defense.
I don't
in a very dramatic
she's,
way.
She's more defense-minded. She's more evenly drawn than most judges. So I'm not surprised that she did that.
See, I love hearing Mickey's side of it because, you know, as a layperson looking at this, I'm just absolutely appalled. Anyway, Sonia, do you have any more questions, my dear, or did we,
nope.
did we get all,
thank
all
the
answers?
Thank you so much, and thank you,
thank
Cheryl.
You. Thank you very
thank
much,
you,
my dear. Thanks for calling in. Okay, let's go. Let's try another phone call here. That was a good one. Nobody threatened to kill me. That's always good. Let's go to area code. Area code, where? There you are. Area code 267. You are on the air with Cheryl McCollum, Mickey Sherman, Michael in Minnesota, and Wah. What is your question?
Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Who's this?
This is Latrice.
Latrice, what is your question, my dear?
Yes. I wanted to, you know, like clear up some things as far as the case. I don't think it was a racial thing, and I'm African-American myself, so, you know, I'm not on George Zimmerman's side and I'm not on Trayvon's side. It's just the point, in my opinion, itself. I don't think it was, you know, as far as a racial thing because of the fact that the young lady did have her house broken into, but, you know, by two black guys, African-American guys, but I don't think my opinion about George Zimmerman, shall I say, is I don't think he should have followed him. I think things could have been avoided if he, you know, went to the mailbox as he was told to do, or, well, where he told him that he was going to meet them. But do I think Trayvon hit him? Yeah, he has, you know, scars. But it all could have been avoided if he would have did what he said that he was going to do, whether he got away or not, you know. But it's just sad, you know.
I agree.
How people think it's a racial thing. Mm-hmm. And, people just need to understand it's a free country, you know, and we all just need to get along, but people don't understand that. And then, like, say if it was the other way around, it probably would have been the same way.
Yes.
Because no evidence, I'm sorry, not no evidence, but no witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just so confused, and I don't even know what to say because it's just like it's sad at the same time. And then
I feel exactly. I feel like you do.
My grandfather was called Uncle Tom. You know, my grandfather is Smoking Joe Frazier, the boxer. So,
wow,
you know, like
cool.
I can't go. Yes, I can't go through. You know, okay, well he's white. He did this to this black. No, I'm not going to do that. That's what I'm just not going to do. I don't.
Can I ask you a question, Latrice? How sick are you of hearing "Down Goes Frazier"?
Oh, would you stop it?
I swear,
Nikki,
I
will smack him. I will smack him for you, Latrice.
I swear,
it's iconic. It's iconic. It's great.
Yes, I swear, all high school, my counselors, I walked in the hallway, down goes Frazier. I'm like, oh, come on, like, really?
Well, Latrice,
I don't know you, but I knew there had to be part of your past.
Oh, that's true.
Huh? Latrice, God forbid you ever trip and really fall.
Hey, Latrice, who said it?
Who did it?
I didn't hear you.
Who said it?
Down goes Frazier.
Right. I said, God forbid you ever trip. You really trip and fall.
Yeah, that would be very unfair. Was it? I have no idea. Who said "Down Goes Frazier"? Who said that iconic line? Was it Howard Cosell?
Howard Cosell.
It would have to be Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Latrice, I agree with you. I have said all along, and you and I have the same type of feeling here. It's just kind of like, George was the adult. He was the one with the gun. If he would have just done something differently, none of this would have happened. And I feel like you do. It's so sad, but I just feel there's a bit of more of responsibility on George than there is. Even if Trayvon attacked him, there still is more responsibility on George. Is how I feel. So, and I'm sorry about your grandfather. He passed away this year, didn't he? Or was it last year?
No, he passed away in 2011.
Okay. Yeah, he was wonderful. I used to listen to him on Howard Stern, and oh my gosh, he was so funny.
Yeah, I just was listening to the prank call that he did with Howard Stern.
Oh, I know what that is.
And I was just dying.
He is so funny.
Yes, and he actually walked me down the aisle that actual year, April the 2nd of 2011. He died November 2011.
Oh.
So, you know, it was an honor for me to actually have an icon as a grandfather, but, you know.
Did he ever reconcile with Muhammad Ali? I know they were bitter for a long time.
Yes, he actually was at the funeral. It was very nice. He was
short.
That's good to hear.
He was short.
Latrice, you have made our night. Thank you so much for calling in, my dear, and I hope you listen to the show again. It's usually on Sunday night. Good. Good. And join Web Sleuth, and we would love to have you, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Latrice. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was nice. That was quite a different phone call. That was wonderful.
That was wonderful. You know why our phone call is so important?
Why?
There's your hung jury.
You're right.
You and she are on opposite spectrums, you would think. But y'all have the same feeling. You can't decide. And that's what we've said about this case.
Mm-hmm. All along. Absolutely. We do have one more phone caller, and the other two follow-up calls have been great. So let's hope that we have a triple shot here of good phone calls. Area code 919. Area code 919, you're on the air. What is your question, my dear?
Hey, this is Alex from North Carolina.
Hi, Alex from North Carolina.
Hey, Trisha, I'm actually a first-time caller. I'm actually brand new to Blog Talk Radio, so I'm not too sure how the format works. But
You're doing great.
Thank you so much. I've got a couple questions or maybe observations, and it sounds like you've got some great guests on tonight, so I was wondering if I could throw those out there to them.
Go for it.
Bye-bye.
Okay, perfect. Okay, the first one has to do with the marijuana and the amount of THC in the system. And I know a lot of people are making a big deal about the amount in the system and whether or not it could affect his behavior. But the way I'm looking at it is not so much, you know, how it could affect his behavior, but, you know, being a 17-year-old kid and apparently, and I know this isn't in evidence, but apparently he was a regular user of it, where was he getting the money of it? Where was he getting the money to afford it? And the reason why I bring that up is that, the reason why George Zimmerman said he was actually, when he, you know, when he actually first saw Trayvon Martin, he was actually could be possibly peering into someone's window.
Right.
You know, is it possible that maybe Trayvon was possibly funding his habit through theft, burglary?
Well, I think we know that. Yeah, we do know that, and that's a great point. And that's kind of what I was even saying earlier tonight, that he had the two $20 bills. So, and I was, you know, of course, being sarcastic by saying, was that an allowance? But mm-hmm. we know from the school records that he
yes.
had stolen merchandise.
Yes.
The wedding ring, bracelets, jewelry. But that won't come in for this jury. So they
yeah.
won't
yeah.
know that. So I think that's probably what they were saying. Like, look, we fought to get the THC in, but now what do we really do with it? Is it really going to help us, or are we going to end up looking like bullies?
Well, but see, the thing is, yeah, with that is I think everyone is focusing so much on his behavior with, you know, does it make him lethargic? Does it make him paranoid? Does it make him aggressive?
Right.
But I think that would make it sort of relevant to, you know, the fact that George Zimmerman said he was, you know, possibly peering into somebody's window.
Hey, I would have brought it in. You're talking to the right one. It
yeah.
would have come in because number one, it's the truth. And again, George says he's acting like he's on drugs. Well, guess what? George was right again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got somebody that is – go ahead, Mickey.
Yeah, Mickey Sherman, what's your thought on that?
I wouldn't have brought it in. I wouldn't have gone down that path. The kid is dead. He's dead of a bullet wound. He's got a weeping family. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to build a bridge between THC in the system and him being an evil guy.
Not so much the THC in the system. I mean, I don't think that simply because he had a THC in the system, he was an evil guy. But, you know, everyone's making the point of he's only 17 years old, and he's obviously got to pay for it somehow. And looking
right.
at his parents, I have no doubt in my mind, especially his mother, I would never give him money to buy marijuana or buy weed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think his father was buying it. So if he's not getting it from his parents, he's obviously got to be supplementing it from some other way.
And that's
well,
a very
we know
good
one
point.
One of the pictures on the camera was of a stash of jewelry on a quilt, on a red quilt. So
oh,
I think
really?
You're absolutely right, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the other Facebook pictures was of him smoking. And, you know, and I respect exactly what Mickey's saying. I just feel like this jury is not stupid. And
mm-hmm.
when you say, hey, he had THC in his system, what is that? It's marijuana. They're going to connect about 8 dots with that.
Right, exactly. Joe, you said you had another question. Why don't you go for it, my dear?
Me, Alex, you mean?
Yeah, Alex. I'm sorry. Did I call you Joe?
No problem. I didn't know if you were referring to another host.
Alex.
The second observation, I guess, is because I do believe the prosecution is going to bring in the DNA evidence and say, well, Trayvon Martin's DNA wasn't found on the gun. But, I mean, I think that a lot of people have missed that the fact that on Trayvon Martin's left hand, apparently there was no DNA evidence found at all, not even including Trayvon Martin's own DNA evidence. So I think his DNA was found on the right, but on his left hand, there was no DNA evidence found at all. So I think that, you know, you can argue the fact that, well, there was no DNA found on the gun. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, George Zimmerman's own DNA wasn't found on the trigger, and we all know
right.
he pulled the trigger. So
right.
I think that you have to throw all of the DNA evidence out, considering the fact that George Zimmerman's DNA wasn't found on the trigger and Trayvon Martin's own DNA wasn't found on his left hand, which I think we all know is a physical impossibility.
Yeah,
Alex,
Three hours in the rain.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying is that there's no way you can factor in any of the DNA evidence. I mean, I guess the person who was actually putting on the DNA evidence for the prosecution, he sounded like he was well adept and, you know, very articulate and knew what he was doing, but he can only, you know, test what he had. And the fact that, I mean, I think that the simple fact that Trayvon Martin's own DNA wasn't found on his left hand,
mm-hmm.
everything else you have to throw out.
Do you watch the CSI shows?
I'm sorry?
Do you watch the CSI shows?
CSI, Criminal Minds, I guess all of them.
You watch all those, right? And
yes,
that's
sir.
The problem here. The problem is these days, in the last 10 years, we have something called the CSI effect. And that is
yep.
that everyone, including you, expects that in every case there's going to be blood spatter evidence, maggot evidence,
oh, no,
bone spatter evidence,
I,
and DNA.
I don't expect that at all.
I'm not being critical. I'm just making the observation that we've grown to expect that there's going to be important DNA evidence in every case. And I got to tell you, this is not a DNA case. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference where the DNA was.
Mm-hmm.
He shot.
Right.
I mean, Zimmerman shot him. It's not a question of who shot who. But
I think
very difficult standard to maintain. It was unfulfilled and unexpected results that you expect because you're akin to watching, used to watching the shows.
No, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think that's the case at all. I think that the prosecution, and especially in their closing arguments, is going to try to prove that George Zimmerman lied about Trayvon Martin reaching for his gun. In fact, they just did that a little bit earlier with the dummy thing, saying
mm-hmm.
that, you know, basically how can Trayvon Martin reach for his gun when, first of all, there's no DNA evidence on the gun at all from Trayvon Martin. And what I'm trying to counter that is saying that, well, not only is there no DNA evidence on the gun from Trayvon Martin, on the trigger itself, there's no DNA evidence from George Zimmerman. Couple that with the fact that there's no DNA evidence on Trayvon Martin's own hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's not CSI and that's not Criminal Minds. That's just evidence.
That's kind of just common sense.
I agree with Alex.
Yeah.
And furthermore, Alex, they did a great job from the defense of getting the, you know, technician to admit, well, I cut right there. Well, isn't it true you could have cut Mr. Martin's DNA? Yeah, it's possible.
Absolutely.
Well, he chose to take a sample and basically cut where he could have grabbed him or touched him. But, y'all, the other reality is the lack of blood on Trayvon Martin. His hand,
you know,
his
I hate to cut you off. But that was my other another observation is, and I'm sure everyone's probably seen the hoodie and the sweatshirt underneath the hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone notice the lack? I mean, apparently Trayvon Martin bled so much, he pretty much bled out, and the coroner for the prosecution said that he bled so much they couldn't get blood from his femoral artery, so they had to go to other places. I would think that I mean, obviously, if he bled that much with the entire, almost three-quarters of the amount of blood in his body bled out,
mm-hmm.
that the sweatshirt, and especially the sweat, or I guess the T-shirt or whatever it was, underneath would be completely covered in blood.
Covered.
If you look at the amount of blood that's on the T-shirt or shirt underneath, it looks like maybe about the size of a saucer plate. That the concentration of blood. And, you know, I mean, there's spatter everywhere else. There's bits and pieces. But there is really, in terms of the amount of blood he lost and what is shown
mm-hmm.
on his clothing, it is a very minimal amount. So once again, that tells me that the rain or some other environmental factor had to have come into play. The amount of blood that he bled out, I mean, three-quarters of the amount of blood in his body, his entire, both sweatshirts should have been covered in something.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
This guy, you know what, Alex, you're a smart guy. I like having you. I think we're going to have you and Michael co-host the show, and I'll just sit back and let you guys ask the big important questions, and then I'll take
you
the credit.
Try my next case.
There you go.
Well,
I mean, he's fantastic.
I'm not smart. I wouldn't call myself smart. I'm just, you know, I try to pick up on these little things that apparently, and I understand it's the media and the press coverage and stuff like that, but I mean, common sense is common sense, and this is what I'm hoping that the jury is actually picking up on. It's not the big things that the media is talking about, like, well, the THC, it doesn't affect his behavior, and, you know, he just because he smoked weed doesn't mean he's a crazy lunatic who's an aggressor and wants to beat up everybody, wants to go do this. It's basically, well, he still had to purchase the THC.
Right.
You know, someone was either giving it to him or he was finding a way to supplement it. And I just don't think, personally looking at his parents were giving it to him. So he was obviously getting it from an outside source, which means he was either selling it, and I hate to say that because I know he was a kid, but he was either selling it or he was getting it from other means, and unfortunately maybe theft, stealing things,
mm-hmm.
pawn shop stuff and stuff like that.
Exactly. And that's all of that, like Cheryl McCollum said, the jury will never hear. But, Alex, you bring up some fascinating points, and I hope you will call in again. I hope you'll be one of our regular callers, because when it all comes down to it, it makes me look good, and that's really what this is all about. So,
I tried to call in last night, but I think it's like I said, because you had great hosts on, or guests on last night. And I think you were having a stalking issue, so I was like, oops.
I wasn't taking anybody that night. Alex, thank you so much. You're very
thank you,
very
Tricia.
Kind
thank you, everyone else, for taking my call.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay. Hey, we haven't heard from Michael in Minnesota for a little while. Michael in Minnesota, do you have any other questions that you would like to check in with Cheryl or Mickey?
I'm just taking it all in so far.
I know, me too. It's I love it. I'm just sitting back here. I every night I learn something new that I thought I've known everything about this case, and every night something new comes up. Mickey Sherman, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Okay. Do you think you could come back and join us?
I wake up on the spot.
No. Oh man, Mickey, do you think you can join us again? I'm assuming we'll be back here Monday. Can you take a look at your schedule and maybe pencil us in and join us on Monday night?
I will pencil them in. I may be out of town, but let's touch base over the weekend.
That sounds great. Cheryl McCollum, do you have any final thoughts, ideas, suggestions, words of wisdom?
Well, I just think we need to hang on, because I think these closing arguments are going to be television worthy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Today or tomorrow and Friday is going to be absolutely fascinating. Mickey Sherman, I'm going to give you and Michael the last word. Mickey, I'll go to you first. Any thoughts on the closing arguments?
3 hours is a long time.
I'm sorry.
I think that's what the prosecutor said he's going to speak. It's for 3 hours.
Three. And that's what you think that's too long? Is that abnormal? Is it 3 hour? Is it
well,
really?
There's some jurisdictions where you can talk for days. Here in Connecticut, we can talk for an hour. On a murder or a shoplifting, whatever it is, it's an mm-hmm. hour. But I think 3 hours is a long time. I got to tell you, I'm surprised.
I agree. I thought that was too, but it didn't seem to surprise anybody else. And Michael in Minnesota, I adore you. You know that. I'm going to give you the absolute final word tonight. Thoughts on tomorrow? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'm just I'm going to be glad when this goes to the jury, and I really hope that they allow their hearts to be set aside and rule strictly on the facts. And I'd like to see George Zimmerman acquitted when it's all said and done, truthfully. I just don't feel like it's been proven. I really did want, when Latrice was talking, she talked about George not getting out of the car, and I wanted to proffer the, or explain, as Cheryl has so eloquently explained, he only got out of the car because he was looking for a street sign or the street number on the house. So mm-hmm. I don't think it was a nefarious act on his part. I don't believe he was chasing Trayvon. I believe it wasn't anything sinister like that. And mm-hmm. That's just an observation I had as she was speaking, and I wanted to bring it up, but I at the same time didn't want to.
No, I agree with
you,
Michael. But the reason I said what I did even earlier is because I think as a mother, even George's mother, if you had just stayed in the car.
That, yes, that's all. That's what I keep thinking.
He would have been safer. Trayvon mm-hmm. would have been safer. I mean, for his own safety. If you don't know where the, quote, bad guy is, why would you get out of your car?
Just stay in.
He's
a cop wannabe.
God, yep.
He's a cop wannabe, and that's the problem. And the gun laws and the stand by, stand your ground, and the society, the neighborhood watches, all are avenues that a guy who's prone to be a cop wannabe, it's a bad path to go down.
Very interesting. That's a whole other show in itself as well, Mickey Sherman. Mickey, thank you so much. I'll be in touch over the weekend. Cheryl, we're going to be here tomorrow night. You're going to be joining us, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And Michael, you'll be with us as well?
Sure hope to be.
Oh, you've got to be. I depend on you, my dear. And, of course, everybody in the chat room, you're going to be with us. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. Now, do remember this. Trisha's True Crime Radio, everything we say on here is our opinion, okay? And if you get mad at something, don't take it out on websleuth.com or forumsforjustice.org, because those two are separate entities from Trisha's True Crime Radio. The opinions expressed on this show are the opinions of the guest and the host, okay? If there's something you don't like, come to me and we'll make you happy. We'll do our best. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.
Good night.